from Biden's America. This is the People's Square. I'm not angry, I'm just exhausted host, Borzoi Boskovich, and with me, as always, is Eric Stryker.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Before we begin, I have an exclusive dropping from Q. You see, that inauguration you saw on Wednesday, you thought it was Joe Biden. But it was actually Donald Trump who got plastic surgery to look like Joe Biden. And Donald Trump is the president still. Swear to God, just like in the movie Face Off. Did you know that, Borzoi?
I'm trying to figure out who's hacking the stream right now. I'm hearing all kinds of crackling noises. And like, I think Q's trying to, Q's trying to hack the stream right now.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, Q. Did I just cuck your story? Oh, shit. All right. Never mind. So, anyway, I have with me today two individuals that publish for Antelope Hill Books. And one of them is, what is it, Maggie? Marge? Midge?
Oh, my goodness. It's Maggie. Hello. Thank you for having me, Eric.
So, I have Marge. And I got Rolo.
That's Rolo's, right. Happy to be here.
Rolo's on here. And these two people are doing a fantastic job. I mean, getting someone to read a book in 2021 is hard enough. In fact, you can't even get people to listen to a 3-minute rap song. Now it's like 1-minute TikTok rap songs by a gender fluid black dude. So you can't even get people's attention span for that, but you guys are bringing back reading. Give you credit for that. And on top of that, you find some fantastic books that are almost impossible to find that you guys translate in-house from French and German and Spanish and so on. Very impressive operation, very popular. You also have original books that you guys got the manuscript from that are huge hits. Like the Transgender Industrial Complex, which is a very influential. Everyone's reading it right now. So tell us a little bit about your publishing house. The difficulties and the good sides of it.
Okay. Do you want to go with that, Rolo, or should I?
Yeah. So I'll take that one. So. Okay. We started up last year. It's kind of a long considered thing. We'd always kicked around the idea of publishing and writing and all that sort of stuff. And, in our group of friends, we basically were able to put together a plan and put out a couple of books, caught on very quickly due to no small amount of help from the podcast circuit, which promoted us readily, which has been great. The most difficult thing really is just the sheer amount of work in typesetting and shipping and handling and all that stuff. Maggie does the bulk of that work. So she's really been fantastic. It's been great.
About how long, Maggie, does it take to edit something like the Transgender Industrial Complex? It's a huge book. How long did it take you to sift through that?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't really counting hours because, it seemed pointless at that point. But I was working pretty much full time, like a month and a half going through that.
Wow.
So it took a while.
Yeah. Christ.
Because I had to check all of the resources of course, the references, and there's about 300 or so footnotes. So there's a lot of sources to check, and they're all they're real sources. It is facts in there, true information.
It's so important. I don't know about you guys, but everything done by right-wing people always feels half-assed. Like, just today, some people in kind of the alt-Republican sphere were promoting Antifa.com and then doing like this troll saying, isn't it curious that when you go on Antifa.com, it forwards you to Joe Biden's White House. Isn't that weird, folks? And so I look at that and I'm like, who believes this? Why are you doing this? I mean, there's actual real life violence you can point to with these people to make your point. but instead you engage in this kind of alternative reality that's really just implausible, and you just make everything else look stupid by extension. What I appreciate about you guys is that you do very hard fact checking in these books and stuff, and it's so important because the system, the people that write propaganda for the system, they can afford to get 1,000 things wrong because they have all the instruments and means of communication at their disposal, so no one asks any questions. But with us, our stuff is always like, oh, that sounds like a conspiracy theory. If you have you need overwhelming evidence in order to show, for example, that the transgender fad, this idea that men can have periods. I mean, just wait. Someone else brought this up. Just wait until, you know, now that Joe Biden signed that executive order, basically eliminating women's sports forever. I'm starting to consider perhaps competing as a female weightlifter in the next Olympics so I can just win a trophy. But in all seriousness, like little girls are going to have their collarbones broken and stuff in sports. Like, it's pretty crazy, you know? And so understanding the origins of this toxic, frankly, socially destructive and malicious fad, knowing that there's no actual science behind it, that it's purely a social construct, that it's purely a political construct, a ideology made reality. It really is important. And also it's important to understand who is promoting it and why. And this book,
exactly,
The Industrial Complex, answers every one of the W's. And I think it's so vital. So tell us a little more about Antelope Hill Books.
Well, basically the way we're looking at things now, we have, you know, kind of two different primary publishing avenues. There's the translations and the original books. So the original books, of course, the Transgender Industrial Complex, this is the first one we've done. And Scott Howard, the author, really did a fantastic job with it. And we've been getting a lot of new submissions, and going through those is that's the main thing that I've been focusing on with the work for the company recently. So I have two different original submissions I'm looking at right now that I think are pretty promising. And
Yeah, actually, our second original is going to be our next release. So I did want to mention that it's called "Live in the Dream." By Jack McCracken, and he's a former corrections officer. That is not his real name, of course, for anonymity purposes. And Live in the Dream, of course, is not a dream, working in a correctional facility in a state prison. So he details just all the awful things that he has seen in his 5 years there. And it's really tough stuff. Some of it is funny. There are some funny stories as well, but it's mostly pretty brutal. And it's nothing like you would see on Orange is the New Black or Shawshank Redemption or something like that. There's really no true depiction. And this is really our first work that's like a current blue collar, regular working white man who's just telling his story. Which is part of what we're trying to do with Antelope Hill also. We started out with the mission of, you know, republishing, mostly bringing back works that are censored. But what goes along with that is we need to create new content and create new culture. So we definitely love to see works that are talking about current issues as well.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the internet has become quite a double-edged sword in the sense that it does allow more books than ever were in the Library of Alexandria at the tip of your fingers. But at the same time, it's also easy to just simply make all those books vanish. I mean, just do a Google search on any controversial topic and you will just get 1,000 pages of propaganda at this point. And there's so much knowledge and intellectual work and cultural stuff that is online that vanishes overnight. And having these things in print in books and having many people own them kind of guarantees that they'll be around forever and could potentially be stored as forms of knowledge to be published again in the future if there's ever an even bigger crackdown on ideas and political speech, which it looks like there will be. Another thing, too, is the fact that you guys are bringing back tons and tons of books that were out of print is so important as well, because a lot of people simply you can't access these books, or they cost like $300 to buy them used and stuff. So bringing back some of these interesting pieces of primary sources and so on is so vital. Yeah, that book about the corrections facility strikes me as something that would be very interesting to read. I always love reading books by public school teachers, police officers. One of my favorite books, Downtown White Police by James Lancia, really gives a lot of context to some of the things that cops see, but also why the system seems to hate the beat cop on the street, but seems to love the FBI agent in the federal government. But yeah. So what else is going on with Antelope Hill? Can you give us any perhaps tips or clues on any new things you might be translating and so on?
Okay. Right on to the stuff that matters. Well, we do have one thing coming out. It's a new translation. So I guess I'll plug that here. We have a collection of quotes and speeches and writings by Jose Antonio Prima de Rivera, who you may know as the head of the Spanish Falange. That's going to be our next release here shortly.
Rolo, we released it last week.
Oh, did we? Okay, yeah. Well, that's our, it's still our newest release.
It is. That is our last release, yes. Yeah, so Jose...
Forgive me, I misspoke.
That's okay. Jose Antonio Primo de Rivera, good guy, big fan. I know Stryker, I believe, is a fan of Jose Antonio.
Those guys were the real deal. Like, basically, the founders of Falangism were radicals. They weren't conservatives. They were radicals. And they died during the war, Ramiro Ledesma and Jose Antonio. There's a whole story to that. But those men were very influential in the Spanish Revolution of 1936, where they were able to defeat a system actually quite similar to the one we have now.
Mm-hmm.
People always claim that I'm some kind of that I'm planning to use Muslims to take power or something, which is ridiculous. But in the case of Franco and stuff, he actually did do that. And when he arrived in Spain, he had no ideology. So he went and went to the JONS, which was a combination of Ramiro Ledesma and Jose Antonio, and basically just took their ideology. Today in Spain, there's a huge fight between Falangists that are pro-Franco and Falangists that try to go to the original source of Jose Antonio. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting that now Americans probably, has this book ever been translated into English?
Oh, yeah, it has. So this was not an original translation. It already existed. We were republishing it. It was, it's been out of print for quite a while though. So.
Ah, fantastic.
Yeah. So there are like similar to the Wehrmacht Fitness Manual that we published, at the end of November.
Right.
That was a translation that was done, by just, shit posters on the internet. They saw a need for this and they just put out a free PDF. And we took it and we made it printable. So there are translations that exist but have not been printed. So we do that. But in terms of commissioning translations, that takes quite a while to do. So I guess the Schmidt books, of course, would be our biggest original translation that was commissioned by us. And then Rollo's translation of The Burning Souls was our second.
Yeah, I've seen tons of people with Burning Souls. That's a very popular book that you guys read.
I was very pleased with how many people picked that up. It made me very happy to see that a lot of people really appreciated the work I put into that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's this kind of idea that those books might be beyond the pale or too out there or something, but they're actually really popular because you can't get them anywhere else, you know. And it's so important to have publishing houses that respect free speech, that respect our perspective on things, because, you know, so much publishing, I'm sure you guys know more about this than me, but so much publishing is in the hands of a couple of mega corporations like Random House and Random House Penguin and Simon and Schuster. And we saw with Josh Hawley that his stupid, probably ghost-written book on big tech, which is just supposed to be like a manual so he can run for president, like a personal book, like they won't even publish that book. So it's so important to have our own independent publishing houses, you know? And I mean, you guys, what do you guys think of that?
With Josh Hawley, I'm glad you said ghost-written, because I was just thinking there's no way he wrote that. Whenever these politicians are coming out with these giant books, what do you really think? It takes a long time to write a book, even though I know they're probably printed with, you know, double space and like big font and whatever, because I've seen these kinds of books. It's not a whole lot of content. It still takes some time, and I don't know that the politicians are really writing it themselves. So
they don't write these books any more than they write the laws they sign.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, do you guys like have any idea like what exactly, like how many books that are published each year are published by like two or three publishers? Probably like 80%. What do you guys think?
Oh yeah, I wouldn't have the numbers on that, but just based off my experience, that sounds about right for sure. There's definitely a lot of big guys out there, which is why we are fulfilling the orders ourselves. Also, most people who self-publish, if you're a big organization, you have your own means of distribution. If you're not, you're self-publishing, or you're a small company, you're most likely going through Amazon KDP, their print-on-demand service, and they fulfill all the orders for you. But they take a huge chunk of profits, and then you're subjected to their rules, which means you can get shut down at any time, which is what happened to the transgender industrial complex. It was banned from Amazon, like, I don't know, a week or two after it was up. So I am packing up all these books and shipping them myself. So
that's definitely
not going to get shut down that way.
Maggie's work on fulfillment is half the reason for our success, and the other half is our fantastic graphic artist.
Oh, yeah. Goodness, yes.
Oh, no, I really like some of the art you guys have. Again, it's top quality stuff, and you can tell you guys put a lot of effort into it, everything from the book covers to the finish on the books, everything. Because contrary to popular belief, you can judge a book by its cover. I think you guys do a fantastic job with original artwork and stuff. It's not just like some picture you get on, you put on MS Paint and then attach to your book. Like, you actually put a lot of effort into presentation and such. So what about censorship? Like, how many books have been taken off of Amazon and so on?
Well, just the Transgender Industrial Complex was banned, but when it was banned, our account was I guess red flagged, or whatever you want to call it. And we were basically alerted that if we don't remove anything else that violates their content guidelines, that they will delete our entire account. So we made the decision to take off Burning Souls because we were worried that that could be a problem for us. Having, you know, an SS officer on the front is probably not the best look. So so those two books are not available on Amazon. And then others we never put up in the first place, like Hitler. That would also be a bad look, probably.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we typically try to avoid Amazon if at all possible. The main reason we use it at all is for international customers, because for us to fulfill internationally, they have to pay an arm and a leg just in shipping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I'll say is that as political distance, we see the climate right now, it's essentially the Red Terror. And, what I was talking about with a friend today is that You know, you guys may not remember, but I remember that back in the day when you wanted to support a dissident group or get dissident literature or buy something from dissidents, you had to put cash in the mail.
Yeah.
And send it. And I think we need to start thinking more like getting used to that. Like the problem I see with right-wing stuff, alternative right-wing stuff, is that people are extremely online. And so losing a credit card processor or an online distributor can often be a death sentence for a lot of people. This is more so a problem for the kind of alt-light types, but it can be a problem for our side of the fence as well. And so I think people need to start, you know, it doesn't have to be right away, but people need to start getting used to things like just sending a check or sending cash, because even Bitcoin. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw this, but Janet Yellen was out there saying, "Oh, I'm concerned with Bitcoin. It's too, terrorists are using it, and there's money laundering and so on and so on." So libertarians, you're probably wrong that Bitcoin is impossible to deplatform. If the U.S. government decides to crack down on it, which they announced they might, you already saw that effect on Bitcoin. It went down. So I wouldn't even rely on Bitcoin to really at this point. I mean, what do you guys think of that?
Yeah, well, we're actually working on a new website right now that so that in case the platform we're currently using were to kick us off, we have a new one, which is, you know, totally, I don't know the technical term, self-hosted. I don't know. It's not relying on one of those big places. But and then Mike is helping us actually with, you know, payment processing so that we can set that up to be independent, possibly using cryptos in the future. But we do have an option for people to buy off the site and to mail us in either check, money order, or cash. We do have some orders that way, but not terribly many.
Okay. I mean, I think that's going to be going into the future. We're going to have to increasingly rely on just sending people cash in the mail. You know, so it's just something to get ready for. I don't know. What do you guys think about what's going on right now in the country? I mean, do you think it's are they just blowing a lot of hot air, or do you think that they're really like coming? Like, what do you guys think?
I think a lot of it is hot air. I think a lot of it is that they are very upset by the events of the last 4 years. Even though to our perspective, nothing happened. I think they're genuinely rattled and looking for, grasping for straws is how I would put it. That's where I think they're at right now.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, there's a point in recent history where it would be kind of almost unfathomable for Amazon to be censoring books based on their political content, because the First Amendment and free speech and the right to read and write whatever you want within the law was held so sacred. But I find that this has eroded rapidly under Trump. And what's so shitty about it is that Trump actually didn't make any lasting impact in Washington. Like, I saw that on his first day, Joe Biden basically use executive orders to just undo every single thing Trump did, other than maybe his legislative achievements, like the fucking tax cuts for billionaires and things like that. Mm-hmm. So the few kind of symbolic gestures Trump made, they're already erased. So, you know, it's Trump was kind of the worst of all worlds in some sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Like one symbolic gesture he made, I think in 2018, he declared today, January 22nd, National Sanctity of Human Life Day. And now this year, there is no March for Life. It's virtual. They're going to have a virtual march.
Oh, my God.
So there's, I mean, like the March for Life was already just a hug fest. You know, it's not like it was accomplishing anything. But, you know, most pro-life president ever, Trump declares January 22nd, you know, this pro-life day, and magical changes happening. Nothing changed. Nothing happened.
I mean, the only positive, I guess, is that they seem to be cracking down on the anarchists as well. Those stupid fucks were cheering for the FBI, but they're going to find that if they keep pushing, you're allowed to attack white working people. Like they'll encourage you to do that. But once you start busting the windows of the Democratic Party's offices in Portland, that's when you see the knives come out, and you saw that they're starting to crack down on the anarchists as well. They don't need them anymore. So, yeah, but, you know, ultimately I think that for people like us who engage in journalism and alternative culture and books and so on, I think that the coming years, I think it would have been the same if Trump had won the election, but the coming years are going to be difficult, but we're just going to have to stick to it, you know, because it's important that this information get out and reach the masses, because it's not only is it history, but it's also relevant to this day and age, you know?
Absolutely. No matter what happens, you know, politically, we're still going to be here. Whether they, mm-hmm. you know, try to shut us down, we'll try to bounce back up, maybe under a different name if need be. But, you know, we're dedicated to putting this material out there. And we're not the only people, of course. There's lots of similar publishers or associated publishers. Shout out to them, Imperium Press. I know you've talked to Mike before, mm-hmm. Taxi Arch and Rogue Scholar, you know, and we get questions all the time, people asking us, like, how did you do this and how can we do this? Because other people, you know, want to get in the game as well, which is great. I mean, putting out one book every 2 weeks, but we get way more submissions than that that we're not going to be able to keep up with at some point. So there's so much that needs to be published, and a lot of white people with not a whole lot to do that's productive. So they should get in the publishing game.
What makes me laugh? What makes me laugh is every time I talk to somebody, the amount of people who apparently are submitting books to you right now, because I just talked to somebody else. It's like, and he's like, I'm submitting my book to Antelope Hill. It's like, you too? Is everybody being published by Antelope Hill now? That's a good thing.
Yeah, I hope no one feels bad if we can't. It's just, you know, there's too much.
We've already hit the point where our release schedule is filled pretty much like through the year.
Wow. Holy crap, that's fucking that's fantastic news.
Yeah.
You know, that I find to be very good. But so tell me, what is first, Maggie, what's your favorite book ever written?
My favorite book ever written? Well, I'm going to have to be cringe and say the Bible. I'm that person.
What's your favorite translation of it?
My favorite translation. I have the new revised version, which is not the one that they read at Mass, because that one is not good.
Well, what's the difference?
What's the difference? Well, I don't know how much you know about it, but they have the one that they read at the Novus Ordo Mass, it seems a little cold sometimes and a little too maybe literal in the explanation, or the translation rather. The RSV, Revised Standard Version, seems, I don't know, more true to the heart of the Bible. And I'm listening to a podcast right now that's, like, this is my one podcast that breaks away from you guys. It's nice and clean, you know, besides Full House. not that, you know, just sometimes it's nice to not have.
I have a very foul mouth. I know.
Right. Where I'm actually listening to portions of the Bible every day. So I'm a big cringe trad cath. All right.
You're in good company here.
We all have fun. I'm joking. I respect people that are sincere Catholics, because I respect sincere people of any stripe. You know, I don't care what your religion is. It's just that we live in this age of gay ass irony that it's always refreshing to meet someone that isn't constantly resorting to irony to try and qualify their deeply held beliefs and convictions. It's admirable that someone has any convictions at all in this day and age.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Specifically, looking at the Book of Job right now, I'm liking that. It's a good journey walking with Job because for those who aren't familiar, Job is one of the few people in the Bible who's described as a righteous man. Very few people are described as righteous, that he's like this wonderful guy. He follows God and everything. And the devil basically asks God, like, oh, yeah, you think he really worships you? Well, then take away everything he has. He won't worship you anymore. So God takes up the challenge and, you know, basically he loses everything. His house burns down and all his kids die and, you know, all of his servants are killed. And just, you know, he loses literally everything. And then he starts growing all these sores. And it's just this of where is God in the suffering? Anyway, but now I sound like the Godcast. It's a very good book. I recommend it.
Yeah. No, I mean, there is wisdom in that, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, what about you, Rollo? What's your favorite book other than the Bible?
All right. Well, I'll take it in a slightly, slightly different direction, although still with some, I suppose, religious undertones. Probably a tie between Dune by Frank Herbert, which is a pretty popular choice for this question, I imagine. Or possibly Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky. I really like that.
I know about Dostoevsky, but I've never read Dune. And I have that constantly being recommended to me, but I'm just not into like kind of fantasy or sci-fi personally. What's so great about Dune? What's your why do you love that book?
Well, it's a very fascinating setting. Like, basically, imagine space, like Sufi Muslims, but in space. and with like the Holy Roman Empire and psychic powers and sword fights and all that kind of good stuff, it makes for very compelling world building. You know, it's of course been like ripped off by every sci-fi series ever since, you know, especially Star Wars. The original Star Wars was pretty much ripped straight out of the pages of Dune.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
At least with the initial setup. I mean, you know, boy grows up on desert world, father dies, comes under the tutelage of a hermit out in the desert to learn, you know, magic powers.
It feels like imagination on that level is almost dead. Like, it seems like people just don't have the creativity to write books like that anymore. Now, do you think it's because people have just lost it in this modern world of overstimulation? You never have any time to reflect on things. You never have time to think. There's no such thing as boredom anymore because of all the technology and such. Do you think it's that, or do you think that it's just that there's no money behind creative people now? Now it's just purely people that write pro-system propaganda, and on top of that, the system is like really uninspiring. So which of the two do you think it is?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think our horizons are kind of closed off, because I think when you go back and you look at the literature of other eras, like something like Dune belongs specifically to the space age and the Cold War. And the possibilities that one could imagine from that vantage point are incredible. You had all this sci-fi content coming out, and not just the pulp stuff, the really excellent, very imaginative stuff like Dune. And, you know, you look further back and it seems like all good fiction seems to mirror something about the possibilities of the time in which the author existed. Mm-hmm. And so I think from our vantage point, it's really hard to imagine something else.
Yeah.
So I don't think money and patronage would really fix, that kind of it's a disease of the soul, really. Our horizons are closed off.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I was thinking the other day about how just utterly consumed everything is with the politics of our era. which are incredibly lame. Like, you know, I think that everything has always been very politicized, like you said, the context of the Cold War and so on. But like right now, the obsession with making everything diverse and so on. I mean, it's been said a million times by a million people, but you know, it seems that people now are more concerned with just the novelty of a black author or a transgendered author than they are with a good author, which is why I kind of was thinking that it could also be lack of patronage, because if Simon and Schuster isn't giving you $100,000 to write a book, then you're probably not going to write it, right?
Well, I think, like, for a lot of those books, one of the things is no one actually reads them anyways. You know, it's like the joke about the Ta-Nehisi Coates book that just sits on the coffee table to Virtue Signal. Or like we've seen with this recent, like, I don't know if you saw any of the articles about this, but like people buying fake books to put behind them for their Zoom meetings, yeah. so that they look well read.
Yes.
So I'm
going to buy one when I get a webcam.
Yeah, I think for one thing, people just are not reading.
Yeah, and if you look at actually, I wrote an article about the literary award system. I wrote this in November. And it's an article talking about the basically how poet laureates are basically just a nepotistic Jewish scam, where you have the same four or five people, guy named Louise Gluck, another guy Pinsky, and another guy Phillips, who's a queer. These three people are basically on every single board that allocates awards to people. And so that kind of nepotism really kind of turns the whole thing into a joke, because what they end up doing is they end up giving each other awards. For example, Gluck has gotten $1.5 million in winnings for her poetry, including Pulitzers and Nobel Prizes. And it was found that Pinsky was on the judge panel for all of her awards. And then you look at Pinsky's award and you see that Gluck is on the judge panel for his awards. So, I mean, that has to play a role in it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure it does. But at the same time, none of those people are really putting out any good content in the first place. I'm more of the mind that is a symptom rather than the root cause of the decay.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I think when you look at the good authors who are coming out today, I'm thinking of, like, you know, people I've enjoyed reading, like, you know, Zero, H.P. Lovecraft, like, Delicious Tacos, if you guys ever read any of that stuff. It's all very, like, inward-turned and psychological, and it all has more of a note of the modern world, and I think that it just doesn't... It's just impossible for this world to produce that many good writers because the possibilities are so closed off. There's just no imagination left.
Well, it's also a question of heroism. Like, you know, like you were talking about before, that the space age inspired all of this creativity. You know, it's no coincidence that in times of a drought in creativity, there's also very few heroes. There's no heroism anymore. I mean, who is the hero of America? George Floyd, you know, George Floyd, maybe Rachel Levine, our new health minister. These are our heroes now. So there's no real heroes. And it's kind of a question of the chicken or the egg. Do heroic acts inspire great books and great civilization, you know, great heroic acts in the individual context and the civilizational one? Do they inspire great poets and writers and novelists and so on? Or is it the other way around? It's an interesting question. I guess that kind of goes into what you're saying, and that it's probably just both.
The only author right now that's being traditionally published that I would say that's even saying anything at all that's worth saying or examining is Michel Houellebecq. And when you look at the things that he's saying and talking about, it becomes very apparent like what a rough state everything is in. I think what yeah,
that is a better example of what I was talking about. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. Welbeck is quite popular, even with like libtards in Europe, not so much in America. In America, libtards, they just watch television. But in Europe, when I was in Europe a few years ago, Welbeck's book was everywhere. So there is something to that for sure. I find that the art of the novel appears to be kind of something that is a lost art. Are you guys going to be publishing any novels in the future?
Yeah, actually we have we're working on getting separate lines going so that we have Antelope Hill line being our, republishing and nonfiction works. And then we want to do a fiction imprint. And actually we're working on some children's books as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So definitely like, creating culture is what we're aiming at. Also, I wanted to mention, since you said poet laureates, I almost forgot, we are going to start a poetry and short story contest soon. Mm-hmm. So we want to take submissions from our guys. We haven't picked a theme yet, so we got to think on that a little bit because, we want it to all be cohesive. And, if it's a success, maybe we'll make it an annual thing so that our guys who are writing poets and short stories, who would normally get turned down by the big guys, they can come to us.
That's great.
I also plan on Stryker, and I guess telling you guys at Antelope Hill as well, because the next project I'm working on for you guys is obviously the D.H. Lawrence reader, but after that I've been kicking around a novel for a while that I plan on writing and submitting to you guys, so I highly encourage everybody to, let's start up a fiction renaissance. I think it's time.
Nice. Will it be a graphic novel?
Very clever, but no.
I'm personally I'm personally not interested in novels. I have a big research document on an old computer of a book I was writing, and I'm kind of still kicking myself about it because I started writing it in about 2014 and 15. And I just kind of lost track of and just didn't keep with it. But the book basically was predicting everything that's happening now. It was a book about the Jewish influence in America. And there was one chapter in it I was writing about social media, how Jews would one day consolidate their power like they did with Father Charles Coughlin in the radio industry and just simply shut everyone who disagrees out. So I feel really stupid. And again, part of the reason why I never really finished writing it is like, who the hell's going to publish this? I can publish this on Amazon, but it's just going to get banned. So the fact that you guys are out there now, the next time if I ever want to write another book or something, or someone else wants to write a book, it's great that you guys are there as a kind of a place that will put these books out there. So it's so important that you guys help build this literary culture because, frankly, the way America is right now, there's really no one writing books, but there's also no one reading books. I mean, what do you guys think of audio books for lazy people like myself?
Well, we have been putting some out, and we're probably going to do more. Have we actually released any of those yet, Maggie?
Almost ready to release. We're working on, I guess we can say what they are, for The Burning Souls. And Hitler, we are working on audiobooks because those are our two top sellers. Absent the transgender industrial complex, I don't know that anyone really wants to listen to that as an audiobook. We have gotten requests for that from people that I wouldn't say are lazy, but a lot, they don't have the time to sit down and read a book, and that's understandable. So we're happy to produce those.
Yeah. I think that audiobooks are very important because I know there's a massive market for them. The problem is how do you get them out there? Because have you guys ever looked at like Audible? Does Audible have similar standards as Amazon in terms of censoring ideas and stuff? Or what do you guys think of that?
Amazon, like I said, we're not really going to be relying on them too much. Mm. We're really Well, we really don't rely on them now. We only have stuff up there for international customers. It is handy that they have the Kindle as well.
Yes.
For the ebooks. We do make ebooks that are as an EPUB. I don't know how audiobooks would work for Amazon, if that's even an option. I guess it would be pointless really to do that, because they can just go through our website regardless where you are around the world. So
yeah, I mean, I've seen some very radical books on Audible. So Arctos, I'm not sure. And I know that. Wait, what?
Arctos, they have their books on there. They have audiobooks on Audible. Arctos.
Yes, I have noticed that. I the last audiobook I listened to on Audible was Joseph Goebbels' Michael. Have you ever heard of that? It's a novel Joseph Goebbels wrote. It's actually pretty good. It was panned as kitschy and sentimentalist and so on, but it's actually very good.
Audible,
and that's on Audible.
Audible had the Ford translation of Mein Kampf for the longest time, but then that got taken down at some point. I don't know when.
Wow. Yeah. I listened to that on Audible. I was very surprised. So it was 3 years ago. So it was up 3 years ago. I don't know about since then.
Yeah. So of course, but what's so great is that you guys or people just go directly to you. I mean, that's one problem the system's having right now, is that they deplatform us from everything and our audiences just follow us. So like, you know, okay, you can deplatform me from Twitter. I just got like 4,000 new subs on Telegram. You can deplatform me from YouTube, but people will just go, the people that miss the live stream, they'll just go right to the TRS site and listen to it there. So it's just like they're playing a bit of a losing game there. I mean, their mentality seems to be that instead of addressing the actual problems they're causing that builds audiences for these ideas, the answer instead is to look in between the couch cushions to see if there's anything else to censor. And so that's going to end up biting them in the ass. But so tell me, other than publishing books, what other kinds of products or things are being sold on Antelope Hill?
Oh, well, we have bookmarks.
So, fantastic. I've seen some of those bookmarks.
Yeah. The bookmarks are great. They're designed by the same graphic artist, Swifty, who does all of our covers. And, you know, any schmuck could do what I'm doing, packing books and, you know, making the insides look pretty on Word. But I could never do what she does with the covers. And, you know, she's definitely one of a kind, having like just – she has faces on everything, just the looks, and the shadowing is beautiful. And yeah, the bookmarks are great as well. Also has a sticker says Antelope Hill Publishing, pretty simple. But yeah, we had some specialty stickers or bookmarks, sorry, that are not listed on the website for Hitler. We have one that says literally Hitler. So if you buy a Hitler, you will get a literally Hitler bookmark, though we don't have it listed on the website. And if you bought the Burning Souls during the Christmas season, you also received a Leon DeGrell bookmark where he's wearing a Santa hat. So
that's fantastic. Yeah, it's pretty clever. It's like Merry Xmas, but the X is the cross of Burgundy, is one of the symbols associated with his movement. Yeah. And I guess Belgium generally.
Yeah,
How did you guys come up with the idea to do this the publishing house? How did that work?
Well, it wasn't either of our ideas. It was Louis, who was on the Third Rail before. I think maybe something else. He was the founder. So he was looking, and a friend of his as well were trying to find the Burning Souls in English, and they couldn't find it. So they're like, well, we'll just have to do it ourselves. They found somebody to translate it, and then Rollo was commissioned here to edit it and was like, I think I could improve the translation, which is amazing that he did, because Rollo doesn't speak French.
I learned, I still can't speak it. Yeah, I'm pretty good with German, but I learned to read French specifically to do this. I don't understand the pronunciation spoken.
Yeah, what always gets me with different languages are the little accents and things like that. I always get those mixed up in French or Italian or Spanish or whatever. It's hard to keep up with all that, you know, but yeah, that's quite a feat, actually.
Yeah,
and it's amazing. It started so small, and then it became this big thing.
Yeah, it was a little over a year ago that Louis was looking into that, commissioned the translation, and then I started editing the Patrick Pearce book in maybe February or so, and then things were finally released during the summer. And then when COVID was hitting, of course, spring and summer, that just really freed up our time. So thanks be to COVID, because also I got married in the spring, so I'm now a stay-at-home wife, which means I do publishing work most of the time when I'm not doing housework, because I don't have another job. But everybody else is working another job while they're doing this. So it's amazing that they can, especially Swifty, that she can do the graphic design that she does part time. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I think that overall though, I looked through the catalog on Antelope Hill, and what I find very good about it is that it's not just the same old books we know. It's people that you didn't know. Like, a lot of people didn't know that, for example, Padraig Pearce was essentially a National Socialist in many ways. And if you read his actual book, and if you go to Ireland, what's so funny is if you go to Ireland, there's a total cognitive dissonance in that Padraig Pearce is almost like a George Washington figure. And some of the Sinn Féin Republican types are at the same time revering Padraig Pearce as they get on their knees for Black Lives Matter. I mean, it's just like a total.
Sure. Yeah. That was interesting to me, because when I was editing Pierce, that was the first time I was reading him, Patrick Pierce. And it seemed obvious to me, well, you replace English with, you know, the Jews or globalists or capitalists, yeah, or whatever you want to say, and then the Irish with white Americans. And there you go. It's today. So it's quite obviously nationalist, it seemed to me. But then when we had it up on Amazon, we got some reviews from Ireland saying, like, oh, this is published by fascists. This is not what Patrick Pearce stood for. Like, I think it is.
Why don't you read what he had to say about these things? You know, yeah. I always say the Irish are lucky in their nationalism, even their patriotism, because their heroes are recent. You know, you can't just make a play where you make Padraig Pearce a gay Puerto Rican guy. You know, that's what they did with Hamilton. And you can kind of get away with that, because we don't know what Hamilton thought about race or anything like that. Not specifically, because he lived in a time before the racial sciences were really out there. But Padraig Pearce, a man of the 20th century, had opinions on all of this stuff. So you can't really debate that, which is why I think in Ireland they're going to eventually try and write these guys out of their national histories, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
It's very true. Like, America doesn't have any heroes. I'm reminded of the comment that the Iranians made after they assassinated Soleimani. They said, well, there's no real way for us to retaliate, because, you know, we can't kill anyone in America who matters as much as he did. What are we going to do, kill Spider-Man or SpongeBob?
Yeah, I mean, what do you guys think of a civilization? I mean, I don't know about you. You know, you might be a little younger, but when I was growing up, comic books were very much kind of fringe. And, you know, the people that read them, particularly over a certain age, were mercilessly bullied. Now you have journalists that are making commentary on the inauguration saying, oh my God, I saw George Bush and I saw Joe Biden, and it was like the Avengers were back together. You know, I saw that, and I'm like, it's amazing how the industry has kind of revived this, and not only revived this, but revived them as a hyper-political and almost like a founding modern myth that fuels the ideology of the Bugman International. It's kind of amazing. Do you guys what do you think about that? Is that a product of Hollywood making tons of crappy movies, or is it why are comic books coming back?
Well, I lack some context here, of course, because I was never really around for, you know, the pre Marvel era of movies and all that. But it does kind of strike me as like You know, you see these propaganda images from like World War II, for example, where they're using comic book superheroes as like anti-Nazi figures and things like mm-hmm. that. So I don't know. I suppose given that it always was a Jewish industry, comic books. Perhaps it's just a cultural touchstone for them that they feel like is effective and under their control to use as a cultural bludgeon.
Sure. I mean, it's keeping people in this state of, you know, immaturity and dependence on ever more content. So, of course, that content has to be full of pictures and constant action and everything. And obviously, this is also why people can't just sit down and read a book or finish a book. It's amazing. I know it's like a thing that the people say, like to ask, what is the last nonfiction book you've read or even just book? And that people cannot give you an answer. It's really,
It's amazing too. Young adult fiction has always been very political, but it's gotten, it seems, a lot worse. And almost every major young adult fiction writer is a Jew of some kind. And it's just like in your face politics and it's all about racism and sexism and sexuality and things like that. And it just doesn't seem to have the same sway that, some of the older young adult fiction books used to have. But, you know, remember though, America is the land of the Nazis were saying this in the 30s. They said like, America takes European culture and infantilizes it. And they were talking about how they take literature in America in the 30s. They took literature and they turned it into the detective novel, right? They take classical music and they turn it into jazz. They take, and so on and so on. So there's this, it just seems like there's something like an infantile streak in America. And it's probably due to the consumerist aspect, but also the lack of a institutional support for high culture. The government simply doesn't fund it, doesn't support it, doesn't put it in front of people. And so the lowest common denominator seems to rule the day. I mean, I think that could be something going on with the comic books too, you know?
I think that is true about sort of the lowest common denominator, which is interesting because it is at the same time a bit of a double-edged sword. Like America doesn't have a high culture, but a lot of its low culture is very good in my view, like American folk music and, you know, bluegrass, all that type of stuff is, really an expression of a national soul that is very compelling. But yeah, then at the same time, you have all the negative aspects of being deprived of a real national high culture. There's no American Wagner, you know?
I mean, the thing about bluegrass is that it had to be compelling. Folk music has to be compelling because Jews used it as the soundtrack of their revolution in the 60s. So clearly there is something very powerful and moving about American, if you want to call it, low culture. But like everything, it is a double-edged sword indeed. About how many books does Antelope Hill have in terms of under its belt? How many books have you guys published so far?
We have 14, about 14 books. Yeah, somewhere around there.
That's pretty good in 1 year. That's pretty good for a small publishing house.
Not even a whole year, really.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, the thing about that is that, there's obviously a lot of different barriers and so on. And there's a technical, I mean, is it, I know the margins in publishing are small, but is it like worth someone's time to become a full-time book publisher? What do you guys think? Is it worth it? Can you make a living off of it or something? Like,
You could make a living eventually, not right off the bat. So we depended on investors for the first several months in order to, because we have to buy all the books. That's, I guess, the risk you're taking on if you're, fulfilling the orders yourself as opposed to having them be print on demand and fulfilled by someone else like Amazon, is you have to buy hundreds of books before anyone else has bought them. So you need to have the capital for that. And then, of course, all the material costs with shipping. And I mean, we're just working out of, I was working out of my house. But, you know, if you were to get an actual company space, that would obviously be a big investment. So you would need investors. But we don't need investors anymore. We don't rely on them anymore. But we're also not really turning a profit either.
Yeah. But, publishing is really going to be a labor of love. Like that's just
Like our financials for the company are pretty good, but that's in consideration of the fact that most of us are doing this as part time, unpaid work.
Right.
Exactly. I don't know where we'd be if we were having to pay like prevailing wage to people or something like that. Probably nowhere good, really.
Yeah. If I was going to be paid a reasonable amount for the amount of work that I do, like we would not it wouldn't do so well.
Yeah. So that's something. All you got people out there that want to get into publishing, keep that in mind that you're probably not going to make any money. So keep that in mind. That's why I think it's better to, instead of having a million publishing houses, that we just support a couple of really good ones. You know, I really hate the very modern and frankly libertarian mindset of everyone starts their own Republic of Bob. You know, everyone starts their own little country with their own publishing house and so on. We need to just support the existing ones that have been able to defy the odds and exist. And I think that it's good that you guys are getting tons of support because you deserve it. So anyway, I think we're getting up. I'm a little tired, to be honest. So,
well, it's an hour. We didn't mention this, so I'm sure you want to go to the donations, but one thing we didn't really talk about, I'd like to at least mention it. Some people already know this, but I have submitted to Antelope Hill my first book with them, Cultured Grugs. So I don't know if you guys...
Oh, man, what's that about?
it's a collection of all my previous work, the stuff that can be found at American Sun, all my American Sun articles, a lot of my blog post articles that I did for Race Boars. And but I submitted about six brand new essays that can only be found in the book. And also the book will include the my foreword to Wyndham Lewis's Hitler book, which I highly recommend. And it will also include the my ending Bigley short story that I wrote as well. But the six new essays run the gamut of talking about irony, talking about VTubers, talking about the origins of Graph Twitter, and there's a very personal essay at the end that I wrote for my son.
Oh, that's nice. Well, you know.
Wait, the Hitler forward. I thought that was John Chapman. Who the hell's that?
Yeah, I mean the thing is, Borza, what is VTube?
Do I want to tell you about this, Stryker? So VTube is, so you know video games, you know video game streaming, right, Stryker? You know, people who just stream playing video games. Now, imagine if instead of looking at somebody's ugly mug, they use a piece of software that makes them look like an anime girl and makes them sound like an anime girl. Now, imagine a million people watch this all at once and give donations to this person. That's VTubing.
Where do I give them my money? Where do I
YouTube Super Chats. They do like the YouTube, they or like Twitch or whatever. They do the whole video game streaming, and you can do donations through there.
Oh,
Beaudry aren't proven right yet again.
this political thing doesn't work out for you, you can always start up a video game streaming channel and make yourself into an anime girl and get and fund the future National Socialist Movement that way.
Well, it just seems that girls are turning into anime girls lately. Like the famous, pardon my veering into this controversial space, but that woman Belle Delphine.
Yeah,
that woman is clearly appealing to people that slap their salami to Asian cartoons. Like that's clearly what that's appealing to. Oh, yeah. And she seems to be making millions of dollars, which
she's
is just
doing
astonishing.
Porn now too.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's the kind of shit. Like I never got that stuff. That must be some Zoomer shit. Hey, Rolo, I think you're a Zoomer. What do you think about that? Why do you guys get off to that?
Well, how dare you slander me like this, sir? I am a millennial. Thank you very much.
Okay, all right. My apologies. You know, I was watching today. Go ahead.
I think I'm on the line, so maybe I can attest. I'm not quite sure because the years keep changing, it seems, whatever source you see. I disavow all the anime stuff. I'm not an anime girl.
Yeah, I don't get it personally. Like, I think that there's a kind of, Borzoi could probably say more about this. There's probably a kind of hyper reality or hyper normalization going on. But it's also a symptom of the grass eaters in Japan, you know, these kinds of sexually amorphous or kind of asexual men that escape into the world of cartoons because, like, the real world is just not in the hands of men to impact. So they hold these little pet cartoon girls as their loved ones, and it's like bizarre that this is now coming to America. It might actually be that men's testosterone is going down and various other factors like that, but it's just fucking weird.
I think the anti-whiteism definitely is something to blame here, that you know, everyone in America really, but especially white people, they're just so ashamed of their own culture or lack of culture, as they're told, that they need to, you know, like something else. So they feel cool when they like the Japanese stuff. And, you know, that's my experience with kids anyway. It's not like kids today are idolizing the Wild West or going to space. It's very sad. Right.
Yeah. Well, the thing is though, is that as everyone here knows, I have noticed the Bug Blacks, and they're into anime too.
Bro, have you seen these Bug Blacks?
I haven't noticed them.
Yeah, so they're everywhere now. I mean, it's just a long story, but the point is they seem to be into anime too, but they're more into the low IQ anime, like Dragon Ball Z and stuff. Yeah. But
when I was in middle school, who do you think I spoke to about Dragon Ball Z? It was the fat black kid in the back of the class.
I mean, yeah, like it's just bizarre. Like I'm having trouble keeping up with the latest trends that, you know, kids these days are into. Sometimes I think I'm getting old, but it might just be that society's getting weird.
I feel old, and I am not, but just interacting with people that are only, you know, like 10 years younger than me, and they're into some weird stuff, you know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's, I don't know. What exactly is rock bottom? That's my question. Like, what is the lowest we can go to in a society before we hit the actual absolute lowest? And I guess we're going to find out in the coming years. Anyway.
You want me to get into the donations now?
Let's go to the super chats. Yeah.
Okay. So first we got to make good, because I remember at the end of the last week, I was trying to figure out what was going on with Tam's donation. Tam had donated to us $200 last week and didn't get a chance to properly thank him for that. Oh, so thank you, Tam.
Thank you, Tam. Highly appreciated. Thank you for supporting us and keeping lights on here.
Yeah, and he actually followed that up. He was the first donator out the gate this week, so he donated another $20 to us.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you for being so generous, Tam.
I got from Glenn the Chinaman, he's donated $3.06. This one's actually directed towards Antelope Hill. Can I submit my translations of Zhang Shigong's work? He has interesting things to say about the third position, America's Judeo-Christian tradition, and eventual preparation for a multipolar world after U.S. empire collapse.
That sounds interesting. We will take any submissions. You can send them to our email address, which I guess you'll probably put in the show notes, but that's antelopehill@tutanota.com.
Yeah, we were actually talking about that before.
Yeah, you brought him up before, I believe, Stryker.
Yeah, we were talking about that, about getting his works published, because, one, it's interesting. We, you know, you guys, if you did publish that, would be probably the only people that are publishing it, and it's absolutely vital and important because, one, China is a rising superpower, and this man is the philosopher behind Xi Jinping. And his philosophy is why the Chinese have completely rejected American liberalism. You know, they were on track to become another liberal country. They were on track to privatize and globalize and so on. And part of the reason China is now designated an enemy by the U.S. government is because of Jing Chigong and the things he's written, bringing back Carl Schmitt, bringing back various illiberal thinkers. Basically, the Chinese are the ultimate pragmatists, and they understand that some form of national socialism is the best and most efficient system, and they're going full speed ahead on that front. So it's very interesting. Someone called him the Chinese Carl Schmitt. Totally agree with that.
A much easier to pronounce Chinese Carl Schmitt. we did have a Chinese translator reach out to us not too long ago, and then we asked Stryker, and you know, he recommended we do these works. So I don't know if we've committed to commissioning from this guy, but we were in talks of starting a translation. But if someone already has something translated, absolutely,
oh, wow.
Send that to us.
Yeah,
the only hang up at that point is it's just copyright.
Right.
Yeah.
So we just have to take a look at that. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like definitely something we would publish. I mean, we have the Schmidt collection, and this dovetails nicely.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. What's the next one, boys? Way.
Okay. So I just got somebody sent me a link, and I wanted to make sure I got. Okay, turn that thing back on, and we have. I love this name, Uma Bomber Mail. Not Una, Uma. donates $5. The USPS has a drug dog that sniffs out racist literature. Truny Industrial Complex arrived in a state that you'd think a dog used it as a chew toy. DM'd Antelope Hill on Twitter, and they sent out a new one ASAP. 10 out of 10.
Ooh.
All right.
Great.
You're welcome.
I was very sad when that guy sent us the pictures, because that was the only one that happened to, and I sent out a whole lot of packages.
That one was bad.
That was horrible. I don't think it was a dog. I'm thinking maybe just like, I don't know, maybe that happened, but it got caught in something, whatever. It was demolished.
Like a wood chipper.
I don't know. USPS is terrible on that note with the delays with Christmas. I feel awful. People, I get an email from a couple people every day saying, where is the book that you mailed me a month ago? And I don't know. We're just going to have to start resending them out, I guess. They're not lost. They're sitting in a distribution center somewhere in the country, just at the bottom of a pile, because USPS has these insane COVID restrictions where they're having two or four people work at a facility that should have hundreds. So I'm like,
but
it's the cheapest way to send stuff.
Oh yeah. No, there's nothing like it, but yeah, my mail has been super slow too. I'm talking like getting shit a month late. Like that's definitely something. So people should be patient.
Yeah. Well, the orders that have been placed in the past week or two, they have been delivered already.
It's insane.
They piled things and they're getting through the top of the pile before the bottom, you know? So,
I see.
And just so people understand, though, like we're not penny pinching by not sending it like FedEx or whatever. Like it's substantially more expensive.
Yes.
Using anything other than USPS. Like you would have to pay another like $5 to get your book.
Yeah. We offer free shipping because we use USPS.
Right. All right. So next one, boys.
Okay. This is from Glenn Chinaman again. He said, and he donates $5.01. A white pill for those in the West. The new Suga administration wants to make Japan the number one destination for migrants and overtake the West. Check out the plan. Sorry in Japanese. So that's what I was kind of like trying to figure out earlier. So I don't know if we're going to get anything out of this here. So this is the moon runes he sent me, which I obviously can't read. I tried to Google Translate on this, and quality is a little bit inconsistent here, so I'm not really sure what this all says. But for those of you who can read moon runes and you want to see what's going on with this this guy in the LDP party in Japan, I'll put this in the chat.
Well, there goes the anime.
Yeah, that's not going to be coherent. Yeah.
Okay.
No, but it is interesting that Japan is getting fucked over too. You know, what I say about people that I said this the other day, people that take on the anti-China stuff, I totally get it. We should bring our industry back, but be careful because you might actually get the opposite of what you want. And instead, Joe Biden, who will just simply sign the Trans-Pacific Partnership again, using containing China as an excuse. So watch out for that kind of shit, too. You know, that's all I'll say. But yeah,
Japan is I welcome our new Chinese overlords. Hey, Chinese government, if you need a publisher for an American edition of the Little Red Book, you guys know where to look.
Oh, man. Oh, I actually read the Little Red Book. I read it years ago. I used to have an actual little copy that you're supposed to keep in your jacket pocket. It's an interesting book, actually. But yeah. Anyway, next.
Nolzy donates $5. Hey, Strike, it's Nolan from Heel Turn. Don't tell people in Australia and New Zealand to film feds. It's a crime. They get you for suspicion to publish the identity of a federal agent. They raided a guy because his house had CCTV last year.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't remember telling people in there to do that, but maybe I did. And if I did, and it's against the law, obviously don't do it. So, yeah. But in America, it's perfectly legal. So you should film them if they harass you. If you're a law-abiding citizen and you're being harassed by the FBI, you have every right in the world to film it. Film the conversation and get their card and so on, and only talk to them with a lawyer. That's very basic advice.
All right. And the next donation is from Dean Bergowitz. And this one reads, for $5, don't have anything interesting to say. Just want to thank Antelope Hill and TPS for the absolutely crucial services they provide.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Bergowitz.
Amen. Thank you.
For that.
Alrighty. This one right here. Let me get my dates correct on this one. This is from... Oh, there we go, right there. So, Vito Grappa donates $5. I'm sure this is supposed to be done in an accent. I'm not even going to attempt it. So, I was out at the store today, and I ended up running into someone I knew. I ended up asking her if she knew about the NJP. She said she did. It turns out she's Stryker baby mama number 241.
Oh. Uh-oh. Well... If you're bumping into my baby mamas at the store, simply tell them that I left the country. That's my advice on that front. So, yes, do not engage them.
Over here. Well, speaking of China stuff, Xi Jinping has donated his weekly $5 to us. Thank you, Chairman.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Chairman.
Louis Condi donates $5. Insert picture of pistol pointing at the viewer. Buy books.
Buy books, please.
All right.
Our old
friend Tom donates $25. I am Polish in America. My wife is Chinese. We both want America to be 90% white.
Very consistent and persistent message, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you for the donation. Thank you very much.
All right, a couple more just came in here. Let's see here. Negro Lunch donates $14. Strong return for TPS. Big fan of Antelope Hill Publishing. Thank you all. Grug use hands. Grug like book.
Ah, perfect. Yeah, it's good to get our guys reading, too, because I noticed there's actually... It seems kind of obvious, but there's a big kind of vacuum in alt-right stuff in terms of kind of brainier intellectual stuff, well-researched material. And so the fact that you guys are filling that vacuum is great because now we can actually have educated warriors, not just guys that get memes on poll, which, you know, there's a time and place for that as well. It's not to shit on that, but you need to read books as well because that's how you get the arguments. That's how you get the knowledge and the wisdom to be able to talk to other people because they're going to push back in some cases when you bring these topics up. So having the facts, having the names, having the years and so on is so important. You know?
That's why I also highly recommend when it's available to purchase, everyone should get Cultured Grugs, as a lot of those essays are already available. So people kind of know the content for a lot of it, for 66% of it that's already in there. But I include a lot of I include a lot of information with a lot of different sources that I think people will find very interesting that will help them with their historical and philosophical arguments.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
What was the next one I had here? Olg donates $5. Stryker should do a collaboration with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson.
I actually have met Mr. Johnson. He's a smart guy. Years and years ago, in around 2013, I was the editor of the Traditionalist Worker Party newsletter. Mr. Johnson wrote a great historical piece on the Night of the Long Knives and what actually the underlying tensions and competition and so on that was going on in that case. Cause that's actually what kind of inspired my view on that, which is that it wasn't that Hitler and Strasser had a debate on economics and Hitler got fed up and shot him. It was more so that Strasser was a kind of a seditionist that was upset that Hitler was moving too slowly. And ultimately, Strasser was planning a coup against Hitler using the SA and Rome. So that's what actually fueled it. And he was the one that actually taught me that. And it was a very good source piece. So a lot of respect for Mr. Johnson. He's a good guy.
When I was doing the episode on Park Chung-hee for Myth of the 20th Century, I found the show. I think Dr. Johnson's literally the only one in our circles who has ever like done it, a very comprehensive look into Park Chung-hee, who was he was the strong man of South Korea during the during much of its post Korean War history. And he was very impeccable with a lot of the information that I found very useful from that show. So I owe a debt of gratitude to him because he helped me a lot prepare for my own podcast appearance to talk about him.
Yeah, he was also influential in a lot of Orthodox Christian circles, from what I remember. I haven't seen him in years or met with him in years, but I remember that he inspired a lot of young men to become Orthodox Christians because again, I don't want to bring up the Catholic versus Orthodox thing. I have my own opinions and so on. But he did a great job presenting a very militant Jesus that is stirs the soul of young men, you know. So give him a lot of credit for that.
All righty. Six Semper myself donates $5. Bought some books. Really glad you guys put in effort to make the covers beautiful, because some of those books in the dissident right look like a Windows Paint project from 2007.
Yeah, it's sadly true.
and I'm not saying this just because it's the book that I wrote the foreword for, but we have that Wyndham Lewis book on Hitler. That is a slick cover. I love looking at it every time I see it
looks like a pack of Newport.
I was going to say, you really like thinking about Newports.
I just
that didn't occur to me because I'm not a degenerate who smokes cigarettes. So, yeah.
Well, because I'm not black, so
I was like, yo, is this to sell the blacks? Because like this looks like a pack of Newport.
We're breaking.
It's like
the
Photoshop on a pack of Newport.
We've been found out. This was the plan all along.
Oh man.
All right, let me do a refresh.
That book is like, I personally, listen, I've read like almost everything, and I've never read that book until you guys published it. I didn't know about it, and it's quite amazing, actually. There's tons of little gems like that have gotten lost through the cracks and out of publishing, and you guys are bringing them back. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique perspective. You always hear about Hitler during the war, or even right before the war, but seeing how he was in 1930 and how people could idolize him, like Wyndham Lewis, who's, you know, a foreigner to Germany, he's in England, is it really shows you the power of propaganda too, how mm-hmm. Wyndham Lewis was just shut up about it after, you know, several years after his book. And then, I mean, Borzoi talks about this in the foreword, then he basically totally backpedaled. He 180s. He's like, oh, no, I didn't mean that. Actually, Hitler's terrible, you know.
Yeah.
It's just sad.
Oh, yeah.
They would have thrown him in prison like Mosley, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And actually, Mosley talks about, I think I even mentioned it in the foreword, Mosley in his memoirs talks about basically Wyndham Lewis, like meeting him in like in a very like very cloak and dagger with his coat up over over his face. He was very very sheepish and embarrassed about having to be of associating with figures he obviously admired but didn't want to be publicly seen with.
Who? Wyndham Lewis?
Yeah.
With Hitler, or who?
No, with Oswald Mosley. Mosley talks about basically Lewis, like meeting like that Wyndham Lewis met Mosley, like he was had his coat up over his face. He was like very sheepish and embarrassed to because he was afraid of being seen in public.
Yeah, you know, the thing about guys like Wyndham Lewis is that it's amazing how the professional classes, the culture creators, the tastemakers, the gatekeepers, there's more ideological diversity amongst them before the Second World War. Now, everyone who has any kind of position whatsoever has the same exact opinions on everything. But there were back then people like Ezra Pound, people like Lothrop Stoddard, people like, of course, Wyndham Lewis. It's amazing to read like just a sober-minded view of Hitler that isn't just infused with hystericism and forced condemnation and so on. And that's why these books are out of print, and that's why it's great to bring them back, because it allows you, even if you're not political, as an objective person interested in history, you see that the Faulkner of his era, which, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think that's too much of an exaggeration to call Wyndham Lewis that?
Oh, geez, I don't know. I've read like the 20 pages of Faulkner.
The Faulkner of his era? I mean, they were contemporaries. I guess I don't know what you mean.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean. Like, it would be more so like the Faulkner of the United Kingdom.
Because Lewis was a modernist. Faulkner, I know, did his own kind of like his own unique style of writing, but it's such a contrast to the way Wyndham Lewis might be more closer. It's hard to say because Lewis was a combination of modernism and satirical. And mm-hmm. I guess he would be more like the Sinclair Lewis in a certain respect, I think, just much more conservative minded. Wyndham Lewis is a very interesting figure. His book Snooty Baronet was lampooned quite a bit of the intelligentsia and the literati within the British circles. And there's not a whole lot of that I think is an analog in the American scene.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
maybe like an H.L. Mencken. Maybe like an H.L. Mencken if Mencken wrote fiction.
Yes. Yes. That's actually interesting that you'd say that. I agree. I'm not a huge fan of Mencken, but he has a lot of little epigraphs and stuff that are really, really good and get right to the heart of things. I know he has a following in the alt-right. So, yeah, I think that would be a good take on that. It's interesting, too, that like some of these guys, they weren't really traditional in many ways. They were kind of out of step in general with high society. They were I know the futurist movement was, if I recall correctly, influential with Lewis and so on. And it's mm-hmm. funny how that kind of does have a parallel to the nationalist movement in the modern era. And that you have kind of this like a surreal art form called memes that seem to be fueling a lot of this stuff, you know, things that are not traditional and so on. Very interesting.
He mentions, well, absolutely. That's actually what makes Wyndham Lewis's Hitler is interesting in the ways you probably that aren't which you would not expect, basically. Because at one point early on when he's talking about Hitler, and the admiration for Lewis was one of the first writers that was actually he was the first English writer to actually even be writing a book about Hitler before Hitler came to power, and that was what was so significant about it. And he was one of the first writers to kind of key into this idea of Hitler being this embodiment of the German spirit. And he contrasts in one of the chapters with Charles Maurras, the founder of Action France. I forget how to pronounce it. France. And because he's very dismissive of Maurras and his reactionary tendencies, and he admires Hitler because of Hitler's what he considers a revolutionary progressive tendency, a modernist tendency, because Lewis was a painter who followed a lot of that. He spun out of Cubism. He had his own movement called Vorticism, and he was really wanting to see the human race move into the next stage of development. As he saw it, and it was he saw nationalism being one component within that, and so he found Hitler to be a very, very fascinating figure, as somebody who embodied such a racial consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, my main critique about, remember I was talking before about sincerity? My main critique of Maurras is that he probably wasn't sincere, because he did the whole Catholic thing, but he was an atheist. It was purely a political play he was making that was frankly insincere. But he does have, actually, Francois does have a lot of interesting history behind it as well, though. So I find that to be quite fascinating what you just said, Borzoi, about his critique of that. That's sort of like, that would be my critique of Maurras as well.
All right, moving on to the next one. Zero Schizo donates $1. Guys, is it true that once you are booted from all platforms for streaming, you will upload your episodes on OnlyFans? Also for Antelope, thoughts on doing cross-publishing and having access to South American catalog titles? Obviously, you can translate them.
I'm not sure exactly what he means by that. Tell you the truth, like
I think he's because Zero Schizo, he's a friend of the show. He's done his own translations of stuff. I think what he might be referring to is like linking up with like guys like him, and they can give you access to other works that may be a little bit more obscure but of interest. If I'm reading that correctly.
If it's in terms of like finding content, then yeah, of course. I mean, we're always taking submissions. If he means also like potentially getting copyright stuff, that's always helpful. That's something we have, it's always a pain in the ass, frankly.
Yeah. We're translating things to Spanish. Actually, like the Transgender Industrial Complex is being translated into Spanish and French right now. So,
oh, wow.
Of them want to buy it, that because I would think that most people would speak English as well, who would be to that level of reading, but I
yeah, a lot of people outside of the Anglosphere find the transgender thing to be weird, including leftists in places like France and so on. Like they're not really they're all into gay stuff and sexual liberation, but the transgender crap hasn't really taken to France yet. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting, because that's going to come eventually, right? It's part of American foreign policy, but it's going to be interesting that they're going to get that book before it's even really a big problem in their country.
That's very funny, because that confirms a lot of my own personal experiences. Like, even lesbian girls from other countries, they find it very like repellent. Even they're weirded out by it.
Yeah, the thing is that obviously French has masculine and feminine forms of words, and you already have. There's a ton of just simply just simply logistical issues with undoing male and female in Latin languages. So That's probably why it hasn't gotten there yet. Like English is very much kind of easier and more likely to be used in that way, because there's not as many grammatical challenges and so on. So that's probably the language that is the biggest barrier to tranny stuff there. But it's still happening. I mean, you see transgender shit in the Spanish speaking world, especially. On places like Brazil as well. So that stuff is out there, but I don't know. They still kind of see it as what it is, which is just a perversion. It's not some kind of holy sacrament that you're doing when you clip your prick off, you know, like in America. Like I was just talking to some friends about Rachel Levine, who's our health minister now. And I was talking to them. I'm like, you know, this man is not even taking hormones. Like this is just, I use the term Mrs. Doubtfire, but it really isn't an exaggeration to say that. It's just a man with long hair. Like that's all it is. And so like for much of the world looking at America, including in the liberal West, they're just like kind of scratching their heads about it. But you do see tranny stuff going on in Britain. You see it in Ireland. You see it in Australia. You see it more so in the English speaking world more than any other place. So
that's true. Yeah. The book does look at globally where money is going, not just in America. I believe Sweden and Lithuania were referenced several times.
The Netherlands quite a bit as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot going on there too, or at least it's being pushed. I don't know how much the population is accepting it.
You even see like attempts to try and reform Latin languages like Spanish with like terms like Latinx, right? Like that's clearly an attempt to address the problem they have with the language to try and meme this. So like they are trying.
I can't imagine that ever catching on outside of like, you know, Latin Americans in the U.S., in the U.S. University system.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really the only place it has any circulation.
Right. Yeah, in general, all this stuff is really just in the university system. But anyway, let's go to the next question. Actually, Borzoi, let me just grab a pack of smokes. Just keep going.
Okay. I mean, I guess I don't know where to go with that, but I think I mentioned it a couple times, but the next thing, so the next thing I'm planning on doing is the D.H. Lawrence reader, which I got to say, I can't remember who floated the idea to me. This was months ago, but I'm very excited to actually be doing something like that, to go through all the works I've been since the last couple days. I've got so many ideas of what topics to kind of like collect quotes and passages for.
Yeah, actually, my husband is looking at me. He, I don't know if it was him, but he was definitely, it might have been him. He's shaking his head. So my husband was game for you doing D.H. Lawrence. There, he's got his cred.
All right.
Yeah, we're definitely excited for that.
Were we going to say Rollo? Okay, that Rollo.
Wasn't me.
Oh, okay. Are you back, Striker?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, Dean Berkowitz donates another $5. Do you guys have anything to say about people who are against reaching out to disgruntled Trump supporters in times like these? Not trying to encourage any kind of infighting. I'm just curious to hear your thoughts. I think outreach is ultimately good.
Yeah, well, I mean, the clear fact is that every white is a potential comrade, and that includes former Trump supporters especially. You can hate Trump, but love his supporters. I don't understand why that's so confusing to people, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and join with the Jews and shitting on someone like Ashley Babbitt. I'm just not going to do that. So that's my position on it. You can disagree. No one's telling you to have to communicate with them or talk to them or try and educate them on certain issues. But, you know, half of them are probably going to depoliticize now that Q is gone, but the other half are going to keep looking for answers. So simply putting answers in front of them, what's it cost you? It doesn't even cost you anything. So
that's just my view on that. I will find it amusing if there are people who somehow have less sympathy for Ashley Babbitt than a Jew like Bill Maher. I will be amused if that's the case.
Bill Maher, I mean, this is going to be a controversial opinion, but Bill Maher isn't that bad on many things. Like, he has a lot of insightful things to say. I mean, obviously, that guy despises me and would love to have me, he'd love to put a bullet in the back of my head, just like his Russian Jew ancestors did to whites years ago. But with that said, he is rather intelligent, and he has intelligent things to say, and he's willing to go against his audience to say intelligent things, but
well, the funny thing is about Jews like that is like, so you have a type of Jew who you might call like the more pragmatic type Jew, and so, and because they're Jews, they're going to have the luxury of having nuance in their positions because they're not, nobody's right. going to tell, like, give them shit for it because right. you know they're top dog, and so they strike this contrast against ideologues who are fully committed to the position that was given to the foot soldiers. Basically, it's a weird yeah. thing to sometimes behold.
Yeah, but Bill Maher is usually on the side of a principled free speech position, and that's really rare nowadays. And like you said, it's probably because he's Jewish and can get away with it. But, you know, Bill Maher has said and done things in the last 10 or 15 years that anyone else in his position would have gotten driven off the air for. And he's able to keep his position because, like you said, he's a Jew. So you can't cancel Jews. Like some Antifas were complaining about how they tried for 4 years to get Stephen Miller fired, and it just never happened. And I'm like, well, you got to just realize you just can't cancel them. They are uncancelable. So that's kind of why Bill Maher can say certain things that even Sean Hannity wouldn't do. I think Mike and Sven were talking about this on TDS, where no conservative with any kind of platform has even named Ashley Babbitt in a context that wasn't negative or kind of separate from her humanity. But Bill Maher did, and, you know, got to give him credit for that.
Yep. Yeah, the absolute state of American conservatism.
Yeah.
R donates $20, just ordered 3 more Antelope Hill books. Now I will have the complete collection.
Wonderful. Thank you for your support. We appreciate it. Hope you enjoy them.
And let's see here. I think unless somebody snuck one in. Bix Nude donates $3. Boars, good cover saying you can't understand celestial writing. Oh, the Boars Always Asian jokes get ever more esoteric. Somebody might try to slip one more donation at the end, but otherwise we're at the end.
All right. So you guys got anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I do have one kind of important plug. So we kind of brought this up earlier when we were talking about Amazon and the reason we have that at all for international distribution. So if there's anyone listening who is in Europe or Australia or, you know, any other place where we might have a decent number of sales, and you would be interested in perhaps partnering with us for distribution, working out some kind of arrangement there, or if you know someone who may be interested, we would very much appreciate just getting into contact with you. That would help us to make this business, make this distribution a lot harder to take down, deprive Amazon of any shackles that we're giving them, and just overall, you know, be a great thing to get more distribution and more cooperation between America, Europe, Australia, South America, even
Canada.
Well, Canada's less important as far as, but yeah, the shipping rates to Canada are still pretty bad. So we do actually need a Canadian.
It is what, the same to ship to Canada as it is to Europe. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I did not know that. So Canadians, reach out to us. We need you for once.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, if you need any help, like shipping across the can, I'll just drive up to Detroit and I'll just pay some homeless Negro gentlemen to ship them across the Windsor.
Don't bring the book that looks like a pack of Noop Noops. Just don't do that.
No, they'll never get to the destination. So we're gonna do Canadian rum running, but in reverse and with books. That's the new plan.
I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if you live in the United States, order directly from their site. Don't order through Amazon.
Yes.
If you order from Amazon and you live in the U.S., you are a lazy piece of shit.
Yeah.
All right.
What is the actual cut that Amazon takes from your books? Like, what is it?
It's significant. What is it exactly?
They take 40%, but out of the remaining 60%, that's not entirely profit. Also taken out of our 60% is the printing cost.
Oh my God.
We end up with like 20 to 30%.
They're jipping you. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Cause I was thinking about publishing a couple of books self-published on Amazon. Is that the same business model? They take 40%.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Don't fucking order from Amazon if you don't live internationally. Like if you live in America, go right to their site. What is your site again?
AntelopeHillPublishing.com.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. Amazon just sits there with book printer machine goes burr and money comes out. They do exactly nothing other than just let their machines print stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like it goes to show, you know, today, you know, this is a little off topic, but today I saw that GameStop's stock was blowing up. Like it went up like 60% in one day because a bunch of trolls pumped it up as a joke. And it just shows you how capitalism is basically just a shell game. And it's also about who gets where first. It's not about quality or anything like that. So yeah, Amazon is a total scam. Oh,
it's actually like really wild. Like I mean, I got into buying and selling penny stocks recently, just on a lark, and it's wild. On a rumor, I ended up like clearing out $2,000 just because they're very optimistic about a new product they're going to be launching later this year. Sold the stock before the dip hit again. I was like, so this is what it feels like to be a Jew. It's kind of exhilarating.
I think someone was telling me that Amazon also specializes in finding a novel product that someone's selling on their platform and copying it and selling it as an Amazon product. Because taking 40% of your profits isn't enough. They also want to they want to take 100% of it. And someone was telling me that there was some miniature speakers or something that they had a business selling on Amazon, and that Amazon just copied it and sold it for half the price, and now they're out of business. I mean, this is what these assholes do, you know.
Next, you're gonna see copied versions of our work with the covers, a little little different looking, slightly different shade.
No, they're gonna steal our idea. They're gonna start selling books with only Newport covers.
One quick donation snuck in. Six Semper myself donates another $5. When I buy every Antelope Hill book, where do I turn in my punch card and get a golden copy of Mein Kampf?
Oh man, that's a great idea.
We got to start rewarding people. Well, we did hand out to the top 10 U.S. customers and the top 5 international customers a discount for their next order. But I am thinking of doing something different, or, you know, like, I don't know, you get Spain and Jose Antonio together, maybe do a discount, something like that.
Better let my wife know that you guys apparently owe her a golden Mein Kampf now.
No, he's right, though. We need some kind of contest like this. That would be fantastic.
That would be good, yeah.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate what you guys are doing. Fantastic work. High quality, which is very important. I mean, you know, me and Mike were talking about this the other day, how everything done by right wingers feels like it's just like done on the cheap side. It always feels like a grift, like Parler. You know, Parler is like just totally mailed in. The code sucks. Like, it's almost not that. I mean, I don't support what they did to them, but it wasn't a compelling social media platform. And so, like, the fact that now, because conservative stuff sucks so much, like we are increasingly building the quality stuff, the culture and the good books and so on, people will inevitably come to us because that's all you need in the end. So you guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work. And I think you got anything else, Bill Zoy?
Just quickly updating some people on some stuff. My episode with Tim Kelly on Our Interesting Times is out. Highly recommend it. Third Rail will be on I believe they're planning on doing an episode tomorrow. If I'm not planning on being on, I might like pop in just because I have stuff to go on that's going on tomorrow. So, but I know the guys are trying to get an episode together for tomorrow. A week after that, very special guest we're trying to get. I think people will be very happy with it, but I don't want to say anything else. Don't want to jinx it. But and also I'm working on pause button episodes again. So do not email me your suggestions. Let me get to the backlog first. Just let me get from my backlog first. All right, that's all I got.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. What about you guys? Anything else?
I guess look out for our upcoming releases. I'll just list what they are. We got Living the Dream about the former corrections officer, Jack McCracken. And after that, we're doing the Faith and Heritage anthology, which has been long anticipated by some folks. Then we're going to get into Borzoi's book and the FTN memology book we are going to have in about a month.
So. What's that?
Oh, FTN memology is what we're calling it. It's the cover art that they have. We're making a big, beautiful book.
Coffee table book of all the cover art. It's going to be great.
And nice. Captions and exclusive artwork as well that they never used as a show image, but the artists, you know, made them anyway. So extra ones as well.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And the last thing people might get a little bit excited about, we've got a Finnish translator, which is pretty neat. So we've got a Kai Moros collection coming out. And we've also got, what is this other one? A Finnish Lutheran priest. I forget the guy's name off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. Elias Simojoki, who was the head of the, I'm sorry. What is this guy's thing? What is it called? It's the white shirts. I forget what it's called in Finnish. But anyways, Finnish books. Very cool. We got a Finnish translator. So get excited for next product.
Oh, yes. Speaking of Finns, I'm sure like all of this stuff is basically copyrighted. But have you looked into publishing anything by Pentti Linkola that wasn't Can Life Prevail?
You know, I think we kicked the idea around. I'm not sure how far we got into checking out the copyright and stuff like that. Obviously, if any of that stuff is publishable, I think we would go for it immediately. But
yeah, I would assume there would be copyright issues, but we'll look into it.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
I would happily write a forward for that one too. But I think it's going to do one quick look. Make sure I'm not missing anything. I got another donation. You want to just table that, yeah. Striker?
Let's go. Come on. Okay. We got another 10 minutes.
Sorry, Hindu Dindu, or yeah, we'll answer your super chat next week. Have a good night, everybody.
No, we can do it now.
Okay, Stryker, he donates $3. Stryker, what's your opinion on Proud Boys right now? Their uncensored telegram is our guys, it seems, but Gavin constantly counter signals saying Proud Boys is not becoming white nationalists. What's the download? Well, Gavin's not even in the Proud Boys anymore. So,
yeah, the Proud Boys are good guys. I have some disagreements with them ideologically, but they're ultimately good guys. And I think that, they share my stuff on their Telegram and I share their stuff, and it's a good, mutual relationship. So nothing bad to say about them. Nothing but mostly good things. The problem in the Proud Boys is usually a couple of minders they have high up. But aside from that, those are our guys. They're white working men. That's our natural demographic, and it's not surprising that some of them are fans of ours. So, don't listen to what Gavin has to say. Who cares?
Yeah. I'm not refreshing any more pages. I am playing the music. Good night, everybody.
All right. Yeah.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks for coming on, both.
Hail bedtime.
Yeah.
Hail bedtime, hail snugglers, hail our people.
Yeah, take the nap pill. That's something I've been hearing lately. Apparently, the nap, there's a nap movement where it's like split between left and right. I'm not even kidding. Like a fucking people that think napping is a revolutionary act.